you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
We are talking with someone who knows the Koberger case and has been extremely outspoken on it from day one. And in my opinion, I think some of the best insight on it, Jennifer Coffendaffer, with us, Hidden Killers contributor and former FBI special agent. Lots coming out, Jennifer, recently. Filings, motions, the motion seeking to get his indictment dismissed that was just recently filed. His defense arguing that the jury was misled as to the standard of proof required for an indictment. They say the grand jury should have been informed that the standard of proof required for an indictment would be beyond a reasonable doubt. However, they argue that the grand jury was instead erroneously instructed with the standard of proof required for a presentiment, which they say would mean having a reasonable ground for believing the defendant has committed an alleged offense. Failure to properly instruct a grand jury as to the standard of proof is grounds for dismissal of the indictment, according to the filing by the defense. What is your thoughts on this new move?
Well, it's a smart move. You know, they're really just finagling the language. And I guess I should say, Tony, it's a little bit more than finagling. This language is there. It's unique. I mean, it's not the same way in all grand juries in terms of what the standard of proof is. But this is the good news, I think, for the prosecution anyway. And that is that this has always been a probable cause plus situation and affidavit. And I would believe that the number of witnesses they had before the grand jury, the time frame that they presented this case, I believe that it was probably presented in a probable cause plus up to the point of believing that the evidence they presented would be indeed a beyond a reasonable doubt proof. So I think this is a double-edged sword, because if indeed they just say the defense wins this argument, Tony, mm-hmm. they'll just go to another grand jury. It's not like Brian Koberger gets a free get out of jail free card. Mm-hmm. They're going to reconvene a new grand jury, and they're going to make sure that standard is well known, that's the standard. If not, and they lose, now they've said, look, a jury of your peers has already convicted you, basically, mm-hmm. by finding a beyond a reasonable doubt standard at the grand jury level. Mm-hmm. So you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I see it as a true double-edged sword. I think they will lose. No matter what, I think they're going to lose, because I think that if they do end up having to reconvene because they didn't properly read that bit, which I don't even know where that's coming from.
Yeah.
Do you know, Tony?
I have no idea.
Are they saying that that's a fact, or they're just throwing it out?
Well, I mean, it just like most things they've been saying lately, it's just being seems like it's kind of being thrown out. I don't know if that's something that they've found in discovery when they're looking at the grand jury materials and went, aha, we have a caveat here that we can kind of jump into. Or if it's just being thrown out. I think it's anybody's guess at this time because there's not a whole lot of evidence coming behind any of these statements.
Yeah, I agree. There's so much that's just being stated now by the defense. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to carry weight if it does, because if they have the grand jury transcripts and that wasn't the standard that was verbally given to the grand jurors, like I said, it's just going to reconvene again, mm-hmm. and they'll give that standard, and I think they'll be able to meet that standard.
If they did convene another grand jury, let's say if they had to do that, would that have an effect then on the trial date? Would that put all of that back into play, essentially, starting over, or would this just continue as is?
Well, I think it will absolutely change their time frame, and the reason is because it's really from the point at which somebody would be arraigned. So in this case, if this would happen, there would be another grand jury, then it would be a true bill or a no bill returned. If it was a true bill again returned, then he would have to plea for that true bill, and then that starts the whole speedy trial clock over again. So it would kind of be round two.
Interesting. And then there would be another opportunity to make a plea or not to make a plea or do whatever he would be doing. The prosecution asking now, filing the motion, asking the judge to compel his defense team to share information about this potential alibi that was alluded to, but still not really given over at the deadline earlier last week. What is your take on this? Is there anything to be given over, I guess, would be the question. Is there an alibi? The verbiage on it was very interesting of there may be ways of offered by way of cross-examination of witnesses produced by the state, as well as calling expert witnesses. The key word being may.
Right. This is the most backhanded version of an alibi I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. They really gave no alibi, because if they came up and said, yes, we have an alibi, you have to provide essentially what corroborates that so that the state would have time to cross-examine or, you know, to interview those witnesses, mm-hmm. to look at that evidence. But they didn't do that. What they said was, well, he wasn't there, so they're saying he has an alibi, but they said how we're going to prove that alibi is through expert witness statements as well as cross-examining your own witnesses. So I think it's just the best they could come up with.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't seem like an alibi at that point. That just seems like things being argued in court, not necessarily here is my true alibi as to where I've been. And the assertion that, well, he was at a different place. There already is a trove of evidence showing he was at the place, with showing he came and went from that area, from the cell phone triangulation. So to me, it almost feels like, are we digging ourselves into a deeper hole, meaning the defense of Koberger of making the statement he was somewhere else? Because that would then insinuate that someone else had his cell phone and was driving to and from Moscow, Idaho, in the middle of the night at the time of the murders.
Right. I've really tried to look at this from the defense's angle in terms of what in the world would I do if I had this tiger by the tail, mm-hmm. you know, with all this evidence against my client. And I think they've made a smart move here. I think what they're going to try to say is they're going to get experts that will say, you know, he triangulated to someplace else,
okay.
either home or someplace else. I think that's what they're going to do. A whole nother set of witness or experts that will construe the cellular data in a different way to show he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And then I think they're going to say on all these videos that really that's a Ford Fusion or whatever, you know, that really wasn't even this vehicle. Wasn't his vehicle. I think that's what they're going to try to do. That's why they mentioned these experts. And that makes sense. I just don't think anybody is going to buy it. judging from the amount of video, and I think we haven't even seen it all yet. And we haven't seen the crew come in from the FBI that are so good at the cellular data. Mm-hmm. When they come on board, and that the supervisory special agent that is in charge of that program, he's amazing. And I think he's going to really have dialed in all the movements of Brian Koberger's phone. And it's going to, they're going to have to ask this jury to just not believe it.
Yeah.
To believe, you know, somebody else. And I don't think that's going to happen, combined, of course, with the DNA from the sheath. So, but I think they have to throw something out there. And when they talk about talking to the witnesses, Tony, mm-hmm. you know, using them, I think certainly they're speaking about Bethany Funk and Dylan Mortensen and getting them turned upside down yeah. in terms of what their statements are. These poor young women that they're mm-hmm. going to get on the stand, and it's going to be really tough. They're not professional witnesses. It's going to be tough on them.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.